Actually, it's all about sorting. The better and the earlier you sort your products and the more you are involved in this process, the lower your EPR fees are, right?
My name is Patrick Hübscher and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building and managing circular business models. Hey there, good to have you back for our textile EPR series. After Luisa Heuss from Thoma gave us her view on the challenges in collection, sorting and recycling, we continue today with the legal perspective. The textile EPR scheme will have an effect on business practices. While, of course, we focus on textiles, the patterns are similar across other EPR schemes too. So please enjoy this episode. It might get a bit technical, and you might appreciate the one-page summary of this episode. Just sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter, which you find at www.circularity.fm. He's a lawyer since 2018 and joined Rediger Zellner Das about 5 years ago, where he focuses on legislation in the areas of products, the environment, supply chain compliance, and the circular economy. He's advising public authorities, multiple federations and companies that are affected by the textile EPR legislation. I have the pleasure to know him already for quite some years. And finally, he made it to Circularity FM. Welcome, Alexander.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me. Finally, yeah, we had a long time. We had a plan, but now we realized it. I'm happy to have a deep dive today with you on this beautiful topic. And I'm curious what you will ask.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't look for any better guest than you for this topic. We start with a private question. Since you have a background in law and you're involved in many different European legislations, my question is, if the European Commission were to offer you the chance to revise a piece of legislation, which one would you pick?
To my perspective, the most crucial piece of legislations are and the waste criteria. And frankly said, the Commission had already started and came up with a couple of regulations which address this issue, but still not enough because we have a lot of input materials where it's really unclear whether they have a waste status or not. And this can be really cumbersome to get such inputs over the border. And the classification of waste and the transport over the border, they are connected to some part, and that makes trade with recycled content really hard. And for this reason, my wish would be more end of waste criteria or kind of a principle of mutual recognition of recycled content classifications of the member states. Yeah.
Okay. Let's stay tuned whether this will be picked up by the Circular Economy Act later this year. Maybe we have another topic to discuss about in autumn then. Coming back to the extended producer responsibility on textiles. And now I also want to give the listeners a bit of an overview because it might be confusing for some people. The way Alex and I will structure our conversation now is that we first look a bit at the status quo. What's the system right now and what is broken? And then give you an introduction into EPR, the different actors, how it works, how fees are collected and spent, and what the effect on circularity will be, just to close off with some international remarks. So following that structure, Alex, what is currently the situation when it comes to legal incentives for manufacturers or producers to follow certain circular practices in Germany?
Yeah, actually, there aren't any circular ones besides a few sustainability and supply chain requirements, but that are not real incentives. This is more a compliance issue. From product law, there's no such thing as a real incentive.
Okay. Could be more and certainly will be more. Now, another aspect of this EPR conversation is about funding the existing collection, sorting, and recycling infrastructure. If we look at the status quo right now, is there any legal system in place that finances this infrastructure of collection and recycling for textiles in Germany?
There's no statutory law, mandatory law, which regulates the financing as it is the case with packaging, for instance. So if you mean whether there's an EPR system, that's not the case. It's a market-based system, which now is almost collapsed because it has to handle a lot of clothes coming from countries like China. And it's really, really an exhausted system, but there's no mandatory requirement at this point in time.
And when you say it's a market-based system, what are the 1, 2, 3 main revenues that fund this operations?
Yeah, main revenue is the one if a collector collects some reusable clothes and then they are either sold intra-EU or most of them sold extra-EU, some global south countries or other countries. And then the collectors, and they make their revenue from selling these clothes to such countries, right? And yeah, now if they get more clothes which are not reusable and they are filling their collection points, then the system is somehow not feasible anymore and the margins and the calculations doesn't work.
Yeah, gotcha. And we talk about Germany, but of course the European Union. So what we just said is true for Germany. But when we look into other European countries, are there any textile EPR systems already?
Yeah, you have always some front runner countries in the European Union. And indeed, there are some countries, for instance, France. Yeah, they have one monopoly system with Refashion as a PRO. You have Netherlands, you have Hungary, I think also Latvia. So there are some countries who have already implemented such a system. And this, of course, somehow shapes the legislative process, because apart from the GRC study, you have, of course, best practices from these systems, which can be assessed and where you can make some implications from.
Okay, so basically, if I now buy a t-shirt in Berlin or Paris, in Berlin, I don't have any regulatory incentive for it to be circular, nor does the price I pay at the counter include any fee for the collection and recycling, whereas in Paris, this is already covered.
Yeah, exactly. And in France, you already pay about a very small amount on top of the base fee. You know, the base fee would be a fee which covers the cost for the collection and for the infrastructure following the connection, like the sorting processes and so on and so forth. But on top of it, you have already a small fee which connects the sustainability and the eco design of your clothes with the amount of the fee you have to pay. But it's very, very small. It's in a cent area, a euro cent area.
Yeah. On a side note, not mentioning any names, but throughout the conversation, I heard from some producers and retailers who are active in the French market, they just pay the maximum, because the administrative effort to calculate the specific amount is too high in relation to the still small fee, even at the maximum price point.
I agree with you. It's also what I heard. Yeah, I have no information now from other countries, a little bit from Netherlands, but for instance, in Hungary, the fees are quite high and they seem to be paid. So maybe we should also have a focus one day together on Hungary. It would be interesting what's going on there.
So by now, we explored a bit the status quo, and let's turn to EPR. We already used the term without really looking into that. Did 3 episodes already on it. What does EPR actually stand for, and what does it mean?
EPR means, as the name says, that if you place a product on the market for the very first time and you make a margin of this product, then you have a responsibility for the processes happening at the end of life of such product. Means the collection and the sorting and so on, you know, because you benefit from placing it on the market, then it means you also have to carry the responsibility. The background, the legal background, is the polluter pays principle, which stems from European law. The idea is also to incentivize producers and retailers to place products on a market which are more eco-designed, more sustainable, and to take responsibility for them, in particular if connected with eco-mail relation, which we will discuss later.
Okay, then let's look at the actors involved. Mm-hmm. So who are the parties who need to pay these fees?
Yeah, good question. The party who needs to pay the fees is, in a nutshell, someone who's placing a product on the market in a member state for the very first time. And it's an abbreviation, what I use now, because you can place it on the market in many ways. It's not just the first B2B or B2C contract, but this can also be a distance contract via e-commerce. And it can be also if somebody sells products which were produced by some other company under its own brand or label. So there are certain routes how you are labeled as a producer, and hence you have to fulfill this EPR obligation.
Okay, just to make it specific, so we had Scheffel already part of the series. So if Scheffel sells its jackets and shirts via its own online shop, Scheffel definitely is the producer and needs to pay the fees. And even if they then use any retailer, be it Otto, be it Decathlon, be it Amazon, then still Scheffel, like in Germany, on the German market, then still Scheffel needs to pay for the fees.
Yeah, that's correct. If you go down the tier or at the very first sales process, you have a first B2B contract where something is placed on the market. And for this reason, Scheffel has to pay the fees. It would be different when Scheffel would be abroad and someone would import it to Germany from Scheffel. That would be a different perspective. But in the case you made, Scheffel is responsible.
And then just making the other case, let's take Patagonia, a brand that is not originally from Germany, but of course they have stores here, they have flagship stores, and they sell via retailers. Does then still Patagonia have to pay the fees for putting these products on the market?
It depends a bit on the constellation, but in this case, I would say it's the retailer. Yeah, because it's not Patagonia placing a product on the market, but there it depends a bit on the import constellation, who is actually importing the product which way.
Okay, the retailer will then probably charge or use it as a negotiation with the manufacturer.
Yeah, exactly.
In that case, yeah. And the ultimate effect will be similar, more or less.
Yeah, they would set off the amount when negotiating the sales prices B2B.
Okay, wonderful. So now we know who pays the fees. Who is actually the body to collect these fees?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. We have different players involved, and we have a middleman, which is called PRO, the Producer Responsibility Organizations. These are organizations who do instruct collectors, sorters, and recycling companies, so actually waste management stakeholders, and they pay them for it. So the producers don't do this alone. You have the PRO in the middle. And in order to have a refinancing, the PRO collects the fees from the producers.
And is there anybody who will supervise this constellation?
Yes, you have to have an authority who is somehow checking the system and reviewing whether everybody is behaving according to law. But then you have also something like a registry. This is one body where the producers have to register with the volumes and the weights and the products they sell. And they have to observe these numbers in order that you have no free riders which are placing products on the market which wouldn't be allowed. So you have the registry and you have the obligation as the producer to register yourself there. So you have this registration body that's not necessarily public, as we know from the packaging law. So you need this registry body, and this registry body can also, but not necessarily, monitor the PRO, this producer organizations, that they are fulfilling their tasks correctly. So the producer organizations, the ones who are instructing the collectors and so on, they have also certain tasks which are stipulated in the EPR law. And then you, of course, need to someone who supervises them. And this can be either this registry or it can be also a state body at the top, like the UBA, the German Environmental Agency. So that would be the monitoring you have in such a system.
So this was pretty abstract. And of course, every EPR scheme has its own features. But I guess more or less, these are different kind of actors you find in many EPR schemes. Let's now zoom into textiles. First of all, what's the scope in terms of products that are affected by the upcoming legislation?
So the products which are affected by the legislation are used textiles, textiles related products, and shoes. And to make it more specific, there's an annex at the end of the Waste Framework Directives, which is the basis for the CPR. Their products are listed according to their custom codes. So you have, for example, apparel, clothing, accessories, knitted or crocheted. Then you have bed linen, table linen, toilet linen, hats and other headgear. Yeah, to make an example. And from the shoe side, yeah, you have, for instance, waterproof footwear with outer soles and uppers of rubber or plastics and so on. Other footwear with outer soles, uppers of rubber plastics. So you see, it's a quite specific catalog, which defines which products are included and which are exempted. Apart from this, we have some further exemptions. For instance, protective gear and workwear will be, to the most part, excluded. So this won't be in. And then also, which is very interesting, if someone collects, let's say, Schöffel or Decathlon, they would collect products, their collection points in store. And at this collection point, the product would be classified as usable. Yeah, right at this collection point, then such product wouldn't be included in the EPR and would be classified as a reusable product, which can be sold at the secondhand market. And for such products, you wouldn't have to pay EPR fees.
Oh, nice. So that's technically an incentive for the secondary market.
Absolutely. And we discussed it with producers and retailers because actually it's all about sorting. The better and the earlier you sort your products and the more you are involved in this process, the lower your EPR fees are, right? So if you have such a product stream, of course, this provides that you somehow have a very good quality in your reverse stream. But yeah, there are some pilot projects now where retailers are testing this, actually.
Okay. Cool. Nice. Mm-hmm. When you read out the different examples from the Waste Framework Directive,
yeah,
you also separate textiles and shoes. And of course, they're different, not only in their use, but especially also in their durability, composition, materials, and so on. I know this affects also the collection and recycling processes. So how could this difference be acknowledged by the EPR scheme?
It could be acknowledged in two ways. One way would be that in all these bodies and institutions which are involved in the EPR scheme, you could have one part which represents the textile producers and retailers, and one part which represents the shoe producers and retailers. So they can specify the rules which stem from EU law but have to be specified also national level and bring in their expertise in order to have a really specific and really appropriate a fee collection, and also as an engineering and steering of the material flows. To make it more specific, if you are a shoe producer, then you know very well the materials of your shoes and you know the soles of the shoes. And then you can set up a reverse logistic system, which somehow ensures that the sole material in the end maybe can even be used closed loop for your shoe. Yeah, because you know the material quality. Same applies to textile. So that would be very beneficial. And from the other perspective, when it comes to eco-design criteria, so criteria like durability, like recyclability, like repellability of products. Such criteria are relevant for EPR fees, but they differ really a lot between textiles and shoes. That's some are very clear. For a shoe is in many cases more durable than a t-shirt. And for a t-shirt, you again need other requirements. And this is where also textile producers and shoe producers could participate with their different knowledge, and that should be treated separately. And also when it comes to the collection, the very collection of shoes and textiles, then it really makes sense to collect and to sort separately, because usually shoes are heavier than textiles. They consist of different materials. And all this has a relevance on EPR schemes. If you would mix everything together, then the risk is there that the shoes maybe could cross-finance the textiles because they're, for instance, heavier. Yeah. And you would say, yeah, their EPR fees also are calculated according to weight. Yeah. Let's make this case. Then the heavier shoes would finance the textiles. This is, not a constellation you really want, because it's obviously not completely fair, and it would also bring conflict to the system. So you need to find a way somehow to separate the material flows, the product flows, and then as a consequence, also the fee schemes and the fee calculation connected to such flows.
Curious to see what the regulation will look like related to different kinds of products, and then probably also what kind of PROs will be created, maybe with a focus on different product types. Now, let's continue. And we initially also said one thing is the funding of the collection, sorting, recycling infrastructure. But the other thing is also that the goal of the EPR system is to give an incentive to design more for circularity. So this could be done via the fee. But Alexander, how could this look like?
So let's start with the components of a fee. Obviously, if you collect textiles and shoes, then it makes, of course, sense to connect the fees with either the volume, the amount, or with the weight, because you have to have some metrics which somehow cover the amount or the weight of the clothes or shoes placed on the market. So this must be part of the EPR fee. But then you have another part which comes on top now, which is called eco-modulation. And this is the incentive part. The EU legislator had the idea to say, if you have a product which is produced to certain eco-design criteria, which is durable, repairable, recyclable, and so on, the better you fulfill such criteria, the less you have to pay. And that should incentivize producers, slash retailers, to place such products on the market which fulfill these criteria. Because in such case, you have to pay less fees. Now comes the next question. Where comes this criteria from, and how do we calculate such a system? These criteria, they come from the so-called eco-design regulation, which is the basis for certain criteria products must fulfill in future. And such criteria, as I said, repairability or durability, will be stipulated for different product groups in 2027 for textiles. And later on, we don't know exactly now for shoes. So we will have an act, a legal act, which will state a t-shirt is eco-designed if, let's say, 20% of the fibers are stemming from recycled content, or if it lasts a minimum 50 washing circles, or it lasts 2 years. So we can imagine different parameters. There are some studies now about this. And the same applies to shoes. Yeah. And now the next idea kicks in. And this is as follows. If you have such a legal act, let's say the t-shirt law, and the t-shirt law say every t-shirt which must be placed on the European market must have 30% recycled content. Otherwise, it can't be on the market. The question would be, how can we now consider this aspect in the fees? Because if every t-shirt needs to have this 30%, okay, then everybody fulfills this and would have to pay the same fee. The idea is now that we say this 30% of recycled content is just the baseline. If you have a recycled content, let's say, of 50%, in such case, you would have to pay less fees. Yeah. So let's say if you pay the 30% recycled content 10 euro cent fees on top of the base fee, then if you have 50%, you would just have to pay 3 euro cent. Yeah. That would be the delta. That would be such a system called bonus malus system where we have this accumulation incentives. And the interesting aspect is that the European law just says, member states, you have to connect your EPR fees with this eco-design criteria. You have to consider this. But the European law does not say how to do this in detail. They just say if the t-shirt legal ad comes or the shoe ad comes, then you have to consider this criteria. But we could also have another idea. We could also say the state will set the prices for different materials and for different categories of t-shirts. And we have a state price system, yeah, where we have a big matrix and where any t-shirt and trouser and shoe would be included. Obviously, something like this is extremely cumbersome to construct and hence not very realistic in a system which will be implemented in Germany, where we will have a competition between PRO. So we would rather have a kind of system where the PRO will have to some extent a discretion on the amount of the EPR fees. And maybe they would have an option for such bonus malus system, as I explained earlier, that you have either this 3 euro cent fee for a t-shirt with 50% of recycling content, or you have a fee of 10 euro cent for the 30% recycled content shirt. So these are possible options. How this will be done, we will see end of September, when the first draft for the German textile law will enter the legislative process.
And that is probably the reference to the European Legislative Act on the eco-design. This is the opportunity and for many also the hope to have rather standardized eco-modulation across European member states. It's not sure, but this is where it could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Patrick, this is a very crucial point and a little bit also disputed because, let's say, in the first very rough draft of the German government, it could be constructed in a way that Germany already starts with eco-modulation now. Yeah, so already once the textile law is passed, we will eco-modulate. But the problem is, from our perspective, and also the fear of many companies, they say if member states could already now start with the eco-modulation, independent from this t-shirt law or the shoe law, which will come in 2007 and later, then we have 27 member states with 27 different eco-modulation and eco-design criteria, which are already implemented now and which would have to be realigned once the special laws are passed. And this is really a problem which must be somehow clarified. And I'm really curious how the legislator will handle this question. From our opinion, we would say that the member state should really stick to the law and interpret the waste frame directive in such a way that it should really harmonize such eco-design criteria and align them with the EPR fees, and that it's not allowed to do a special member state, Germany, or a French eco-modulation system up front of that what is coming in 2027 and later.
So just as a reminder, we are tackling the question how to incentivize circularity in textiles here specifically, of course. And you explained a bit the mechanic of eco-modulation. At the same time, we also have to talk about the fees, as we already said before about France, when the fees itself are super low in the end, even for the, let's say, least sustainable item, and after a complicated eco-modulation setup, yeah. If the fees are super low, then there won't be a substantial steering effect.
Absolutely.
Is there already any indication about the height of the fees?
Yeah, that's really kind of a problem, and it's still an open question, because if you ask, is there an indication of the height of the fees? It implies that there would be someone who is stipulating the fees, who's saying, let's say in a matrix, the fees have to have such an amount, a specific amount. But we will have in Germany, and that will be quite sure, we will have a competition system with different PROs entering into competition. Yeah, we want actually that the most efficient and the best PRO will have a respective market share. Yeah, because we have the idea that the competition is good. If we were in a mandatory way oblige the PRO to stick to a certain echo modulation fee, that would be not really in sync with such a competition system. We would rather assume that the POs will have to some part discretion on the amount of the echo modulation part of the fee. We are not so sure about it, but it really makes sense. And then is the question, will there be something like a baseline fee, a baseline echo modulation, let's say, for instance, 20 euro cent for every piece of a certain category, yeah? And on top, you have competition, or you will have absolute discretion in the end, some kind of ex post market control provided by authorities or courts. That could also be an option. That this is really unclear, because the risk is that if the OS enter into fierce competition, then they could try to somehow really minimize this echo modulation part of the fees, and you would have a situation like in France, where this part of the fees is very low and too low to have a steering effect. Yeah, so this is unclear now, and I just wanted to draw the problem. The legislative process is still ongoing.
To me, it seems to be coming back to it, one of the main motivations, which is financing the collection, sorting, respecting mm-hmm. infrastructure, that you probably do like a cost up calculation, that a PRO that is responsible for a certain region or scope, basically after some time we'll see what are the absolute costs for that, and then there might be some additional funding areas. We'll talk about that in a minute, and then they more or less divide it by the number or the weight of the products from the producers that are part of this PRO. So let's say in an absence of any external threshold baseline, as you described, you would probably do it cost-based and then ask that specific fee, polluter pays, based from the producers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since we talk about fees and money, you already mentioned a couple of times that ultimately the organizations involved when it comes to end of life of the textiles are the ones who get paid from this money, from this fund, so to say. At the same time, there's also the ambition to facilitate innovation in circular textiles. So how can this fee distribution be organized so that it actually fuels innovation in kitchen recycling and maybe even product design?
That's a very important and in this point of time unresolved question. When we read the Waste Framework Directive, there are some sections which state that the fees must be used for recovery of costs. That's very clear. But apart from this, it's also possible to use the fees for certain objectives, which are clearly specified in the Waste Framework Directive. And one of these objectives would be the scaling up or ramping up of recycling and of also of business models who are driving a sustainability of textiles of shoes further. And then the question is, if you collect the fees and you have the funds somewhere on your account, then how should such funds, apart from the recovery, used and organized in order to foster such R&D corporations? Or how could such funds be used to foster a ramp up of recycling? And there are potentially, it could be the different models. For instance, you could set up something like a fund structure in which the PRO contribute, where they part of the structure is financed by the PRO. And then such structure would foster certain projects relating to R&D regarding recycling and so on and so forth. The other question would be if such funds should be used directly to subsidize the ramp up of recycling plants. Yeah, it could be also an option, but it's maybe also rather critical because it could distort competition. But theoretically, it could be also an option. So the question is, which objectives do we have and how do we finance this? Because we will have many PROs. Maybe we have one registry. And how will the finance flows will be dispersed from the PROs? Maybe also steered over to such registry or other body in order to be used for other objectives. That's an open question. And there are different solutions for it.
Okay. So let's move on to the final category, international dimension, while sticking to the topic of fee distribution. We know that textiles and fashion is a highly global market, even when it comes to secondary use.
Yeah.
And then, of course, also if fashion items that have been used in Germany and other member states and then get exported to other continents, Africa, for example, ideally are worn there again, but will reach end of life there and will cause collection and recycling costs there. So will the fees collected from producers who bring products to the German market, will these fees also follow the flow of textiles to fund the infrastructure in outside of Germany or the European Union?
Currently, there's just one answer, and the answer is no. This aspect was discussed in the legislative process for the Waste Framework Directive, and there has been a proposal, but it didn't make its way to be enacted in the end. So not everybody agreed with it, and which means at this point in time, we have no global dimension of EPR fees. It's a real intra-EU thing. Which doesn't mean that the legislator theoretically would or could implement something like a global south levy. Yeah, that could be theoretically maybe something which could be implemented apart from the EPR fees. But in the EPR system as such, no use of funds for the global south.
Okay. And if we stay in Europe and look once again at the level of harmonization and the risk of very different EPR schemes and criteria during a time, I mean, we're talking 2026 now, where like the Circular Economy Act is coming up. One of the biggest discussions in Europe is always about harmonization, standardization. And now we have a Waste Framework Directive that allows member states to come up with individual solutions. So what are the opportunities for textile EPR to be harmonized across the EU?
Yeah, very good question. And actually, it's a really a pain for many producers and retailers currently. It's part of all the discussions. And there are many aspects to this topic. One aspect is really organizational and still very important, and it's the registry. Yeah, so if you have to register currently in every member state and you don't have a consolidated monitoring and a consolidated system where you can say, okay, I will register in one state and all the registries are somehow connected, then you have to implement a really cumbersome registration process in 27 member states if you operate there as a big corporate, yeah? As a big corporate retailer or producer. So one big topic now is something like a one-stop shop where we can say, it wouldn't be there an option to administer all this in one member state, or that we have one responsible person and where all these processes are consolidated and then somehow the information and all the other things will be distributed to the other member states. In particular, for group structures, yeah, where you have big groups, big retailers or producers, it makes a really lot of sense that the whole process is steered by one of the top co's let's say, by a management top goal, and you have a monitoring there, and such top goal is helping the daughter companies in the member state. Because from an operational perspective, it's really hard to align such a system, which is rolled out in so many member states and with so many nuances, and to have an alignment. This is a really cumbersome procedure for a big structure. So such one-stop shop would be very beneficial from an operational perspective. The other aspect is the eco-design and PRO aspect. It would be a real nightmare if you would have, theoretically, in every member state, let's say 10 PRO, and each of those PRO could, however, at its discretion, modulate the EPR fees according really to really own eco-design criteria. I mean, the eco-design criteria are set, they will come in the delegated acts, but then how you calculate your fees on the basis of such criteria, this can be really different because you have a discretion there. So for this, also a solution would be needed. Actually, the solution is already included in the Waste Framework Directive, because in Article 22C, I guess it's Section 6, there is stated that if we have something like a jungle of 27 eco-modulation EPR regimes, and the Commission comes to the conclusion this is extremely detrimental for cross-border trade, then the Commission is empowered or is competent to pass a legal act which somehow aligns the eco-modulation in every member state. But it would be rather logical to somehow upfront have an alignment between the member states and the PRO there. But unfortunately, the Waste Framework Directive gave the member state discretion at some part in the implementation of the directive. You know, just what I want to say, and this is important to note, the directive really had the idea also to harmonize EPR systems and eco-design criteria. The legislator saw that we already have some EPR systems, let's say in France and Netherlands, in other states not. And it also had the idea to align such systems. Yeah, that was a very important idea because it's a common market law idea here. Yeah, we want to have a common market with EPR systems, and it should be somehow aligned. And for this reason, this aspect should be really addressed at the EU level. It would be very good if the legislator, during the course of the Circular Economy Act process, would pick up some of these topics, would have an eye on that, and would address that with really some scrutiny in order to avoid to have such a cluttered and divergent EPR scheme, which is really different over whole Europe.
Okay, and we will probably know in about 1 year, 1.5 years, when almost all member states spelled out their specific configuration. Once again, I will send you an invite for December 2027. We can review the national systems and see what's the result and what kind of cleanup is necessary.
I hope not a lot of cleanup.
Yeah, me too. Alex, thanks for navigating us through the world of textile EPR in Germany, Europe, and parts of the rest of the world. That was really insightful. Thanks for that.
Yeah, likewise, Patrick. Pleasure's all mine. I'm very happy.
Awesome. You just finished the fourth episode of the Textile EPR series. If you want to check on the essentials, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. In the next episode, Karina Hoffmann-Wellenhoff from Circular Republic and I will wrap up this textile EPR series. Karina led an initiative with 20 different organizations suggesting how the EPR system for Germany should look like. You can learn about those recommendations in the upcoming episode. Until then, I wish you every success in advancing a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.